It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We were permanently separated, not just for a week or a month.
I was at home when I got the phone call from the hospital.
He was hit head on by a repeat illegal alien criminal.
Known gang member came in the back and he fired the gun and struck my son in the arm.
Trying to get away, he drove over my son's body. He backed up, driving over him a second time.
Rear end is estimated 62 miles an hour.
He strangled him and they let him go to see if he was breathing. Strangled him over and over and over until death.
And he dragged Matthew a quarter of a mile to his death.
He rear-ended her, killing her.
He went to a field and put Josh out and the gasoline one and lit him on fire.
Previously deported about a year and a half to 2 years before.
This man wasn't supposed to be here. My separation is permanent. Our separation is permanent.
Cindy Rios with you. That's a hard way to start the show, but I'm coming to you live again from Phoenix Park Hotel in downtown D.C. It is FAIR. That's the Federation for American Immigration Reform. They've been around for such a long time. This is their 12th year, and it's, I think, my 12th year to be with them. They have been working so hard on your behalf to implement immigration laws that put Americans first. That's all I can say. And to keep us safe, which is what our government is supposed to be doing. And thank God we do have a president who's made it a priority. If only we had a Congress that would do the same. Sitting in front of me today is Agnes Gibney. Is that the right way to pronounce your name, Agnes?
Yes, thank you.
Agnes Gibney is one of the angel families. And I'll just say, to make it simple, to start us off, that she has lost her only son in death to an illegal immigrant. Agnes, before we get into the details of that, I'd be curious to know, I don't even know where you're from. Where are you from?
I was born in Budapest, Hungary.
Okay, and I want to get to that kind of in reverse, because that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. But when you were in America with your family, where were you guys living?
In California, in El Monte, California.
Okay, and you don't have any daughters? Just
I have two daughters.
Two daughters, okay. And then Ron, your son.
Yes.
So tell us about Ronald.
Ronald was my firstborn, my only son, perfect child, just very caring, very obedient. As he grew older, he was kind of a goofball. He liked to play pranks, but very, very organized and detailed, and liked his hair very well combed and his clothes, and he ironed his clothes. He was just loved animals and loved people. He was friends to everybody. He was a very outgoing person.
Was he living still in your home when this happened, or was he out on his own?
No, actually, I had gotten married several years before, remarried, divorced from his father. And my parents moved out of El Monte to be closer to me as they were getting older. And Ronald stayed in El Monte where he grew up, basically, with my parents and I, because we lived there. And he was moving back to Rancho Cucamonga, where I live, in California. And a week before he moved back, he was shot.
So tell us about now, Agnes, what exactly happened? What was he doing, and what happened?
Ronald had gone over to his ex-girlfriend's house. He had two children. They were 8 and 10. To drop off some food, watermelon for the boys, and his ex-girlfriend hadn't come home. They were trying to work it out and become a family again, and she hadn't gotten home, and he waited and waited and was ready to leave, talking to a friend at the edge of a driveway, when he noticed somebody approach from behind his friend, and he said, "Who's that coming behind you?" And he turned around, and then instantly he fired the gun, struck my son in the arm. The bullet traveled across his chest, severing a main artery, and my son yelled, "Robert, run, run." And he took off running, probably very scared. My son took off running.
Okay.
And this gang member cocked the gun to shoot Robert because that was his target, his friend, and the gun jammed. But my son is the one that got the bullet.
So your son was not, he was not the intentional target. He wasn't part of a gang?
No.
And so this is just a random...
Yeah, this gang member and my son's friend, I guess, had gotten into a fight, and he wanted to get even.
And who was the shooter?
Mexican national who had a long history of arrests, domestic violence, burglaries, and assaults, and he had been previously deported.
So... When did you know about that? Did you know when
it took me a long time to find out that he was that he even had an ICE hold, and I think I found out by accident. Somebody at one of the calls that I was checking on him mentioned that he had an ICE hold, and I said he does, and they said, "Well, you need to sign up with the federal government to be notified of his release or when he gets picked up by ICE." But then, you know, the laws in California changed so much with sanctuary bills. Just because somebody has an ICE hold, it means nothing, because they would release the offender back to our streets. And the big concern is he's going to hurt somebody else, victimize somebody else, or even come after me or my family.
So, Agnes, this, unlike a lot of the angel moms we're hearing about who are more, like I just interviewed one of your friends who lost her daughter in 2016, you lost your son in 2002. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking back, all right, so... this guy, the murderer, whose name was, Luis
Humberto Gonzalez.
You don't know where he is?
He's in prison right now.
He's in prison now. Okay.
He eventually turned himself in because the police found out that his girlfriend was depositing her welfare check at a credit union, and he was withdrawing it in Tijuana to live on. And they said that they were going to take his kids. She was pregnant with a fourth kid, and so she told him to come back, and he eventually crossed the border back into the United States.
So he's in prison for that, but is he in prison for the murder of your son?
He is.
Okay.
And the liberal judge brought it down from first degree or second degree murder to voluntary manslaughter because the judge kept insisting that he plead the case. And he eventually pled the case to voluntary manslaughter, got 11 years plus 10 years for using a firearm, which in California, gun enhancement is no longer on the books.
Agnes, the twist here is something you mentioned earlier, and that is that you yourself were a refugee.
Or yes.
I don't know if you call yourself a refugee.
Yes. Yes. My parents escaped from Hungary during the 1956 revolution.
You know, it's funny. I want to interject something because when I was growing up in school here, we used to have assemblies about different things. I don't know how else to explain it. And I remember a Hungarian refugee coming to my school and talking about that uprising and how America let them down. And he nearly wept. And I was just a little girl, and I could not bear that story. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
About how the Americans, that's another not proud moment in our past where the politicians got involved and we encouraged the revolution and then we did not help. So your parents came, and were you born then yet?
I was born in Budapest. I was 2 years old when my parents escaped.
Okay, so they came as refugees and became citizens? And
actually, we were in Yugoslavia for about 10 months at a refugee camp, and because my father was born in Yugoslavia, they wanted us to stay. And because my mother said, "No, we're going to America," I said, "Well, if you don't stay, you can't go to America." So we had the choice of South Africa, Austria, or Brazil. We ended up going to Brazil, mind you, as a stateless, meaning we belong nowhere, because the Hungarian government took our citizenship away. And when we immigrated, it took us 13 years to legally come to the United States. My parents applied 3 times, and the third time they were successful. The other two, the application lapsed. And, you know, in those days, there was no forwarding address. And so we immigrated to the United States. I was 16 years old.
Do you remember what that was like coming here? And, you know, the like how your parents felt about it and how you felt about it?
My mother glorified the United States. And that's why I'm fighting for this country, because this is the only country I have citizenship of. And my mother died almost 3 years ago. And I want to fight for this country like she fought to come here. She gave up so much to come here.
So when you talk about what your experience losing your only son to an illegal immigrant, or to an, you know, the left wants to just say immigrant, as you know, what is your, how do you respond to them? You are an immigrant yourself. So you tell me how you make that distinction to them.
Number one, I do not like the statement undocumented immigrant. The word immigrant means you legally came here to the United States through the right channels. You followed the, went through background investigation, full medical, character, everything. You're fully vetted. The media is confusing the issue by calling undocumented immigrants or illegal, you know, whatever they want to put it, but don't put the word immigrant behind it. They are illegal aliens. They have no permission to be in this country. They shouldn't be in this country, and this is not a racial issue. This is not, it doesn't matter where you're from. You could be from Europe, from Asia, from Africa. It doesn't matter. You want to come here, you stand in line like thousands of legal immigrants have come. This is a slap in the face. Then I can say this is discrimination to my family, because we went through all the process, and how come these people just cross the border or overstay their visa and they make demands and they get everything? It's insanity.
It's insanity. And here you are in California, which is the worst of the worst, a sanctuary state. You must, you know, there was an uprising that was in the news in various cities in California saying we are not going to be a sanctuary city. What's the status of that? Is there still a, do you think there's a significant amount of the population there that's sick of what's happening?
Oh, absolutely. I belong to many, many different groups in California, and we send private messages to one another saying where they're going to have a city council member, that they're going to put the SB 54, the sanctuary state bill, on their agenda. And we're making and urging the city councils to put that on their agenda, to opt out of SB 54. And many, many cities in California have opted out. Some are afraid for being sued. You know, this is a federal law. How does a state decide they're not going to follow a federal law? They ought to all be arrested, because this is treason. This is not right. But Californians are waking up, and they are fighting really hard. There were tremendous, incredible patriots in California fighting for this, for our state.
I'm curious, your daughters, you have two daughters now. How are they doing, Agnes?
They're doing okay. You know, it's really difficult for them because they miss their brother. When my younger daughter had a child, she missed that Ronald wasn't enjoying his nephew. When my older daughter got married, the same thing. So it's really difficult all the time, because you always miss that person that's not there, that was so cowardly taken from us. My son had no choice. And what I tell politicians, you're so worried about DACA recipients. They have dreams. How about the dreams of American citizens?
Yeah. How about the dreams of children whose lives are taken, like your son?
Exactly.
Your only son.
My only son. And I say they are complaining that they're being separated at the border. They're breaking the law by crossing over illegally into our country. When you commit a crime anywhere, you are separated from your family. But do these illegal aliens complain when they come here illegally to work, to take American jobs away and take, you know, pack up our schools and that we're supporting and medical and everything else, and their families are back in their respective countries? They don't call that separation of families?
Agnes, you're a great spokesperson, and I know that you're still working hard to try to make the case, and you certainly have the qualifications to make them. We're so sorry about your son and your loss, but it is interesting how God uses these things to sort of motivate us to do great things we would never have thought of. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Every president has priorities, and in 2012, Obama exercised his.
Individuals who do not present a risk to national security or public safety will be able to request temporary relief from deportation.
6 years later,
we're stuck with these horrible laws.
The Trump administration reversed that decision.
If you cross the border unlawfully, then we will prosecute you.
Under the president's zero tolerance policy, prosecutors in June charged 46% of adults detained at the border. But that Syracuse University study also found the immigration caseload overwhelming U.S. attorneys, with the odds of being prosecuted for many federal offenses declining.
My thoughts are that we have a terrible problem with departments that were not ready.
Of all cases filed by the five U.S. attorneys on the southwest border, 86% in March involved immigration. By June, 94%, meaning out of roughly 12,000 prosecutions, more than 11,000 involved illegal entry, harboring illegal aliens, or document fraud.
If people assume that that means it's consuming 94% of the resources of the office, that's completely wrong.
Pete Nunez spent 16 years as a federal prosecutor.
So you could have a situation where one or two assistant U.S. attorneys are handling, you know, 10, 15, 20 cases at a time, all of which plead guilty within a day or so.
Yet the Syracuse report found corruption, drug, white-collar, and environmental prosecutions declining. Another reason critics say zero tolerance doesn't work.
This zero tolerance policy that has done nothing to make us more safe.
Presidents Clinton, Bush, Obama, and now Trump have all tried using prosecution to deter illegal immigration. While zero tolerance is discouraging some adult men, a new report suggests detention and prosecution does not deter families trying to enter the U.S.
All right, that was William LaJeunesse of Fox News. Not a recent report, but William always covers this issue so articulately. I just kind of wanted to give you some more information. We've talked to ICE agents, we've talked to Border Patrol, and right now we're going to talk to a sheriff. They each play their different part in enforcing immigration laws. I guess you would say, Sheriff Mike Lewis, that you enforce law in the communities.
We're, Sandy.
We're closest to the people. You really
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely, absolutely. We work very closely every day with our state and federal law enforcement partners, but as you well know, our federal law enforcement partners have been hampered in their efforts to do their jobs most recently because we have sanctuary cities and sanctuary counties that are being established across this country in the face of a president who has decided to do the right thing for the American people. He's decided to do what we elected him to do. I can tell you that's why I voted for him. It's why my family voted for him. We need to control our borders. Without border security, we'll never have true homeland security.
Would you say, you know Sheriff Stationwide, and I've certainly met many, you know, at least a representative sample, but would you say percentage-wise that most sheriffs are on board with enforcing immigration law, or do you have some dissenters or a significant amount of dissenters?
I don't think there's a significant amount of dissenters. There are dissenters, but I can tell you the overwhelming majority of America's sheriffs are on board with this Trump administration and our president and what we elected him to do.
You guys are the front line of defense.
We are.
You really are. And let me just ask you this. Now, you are from Wicomico?
Wicomico.
Wicomico. I should have done my homework.
That's okay, Sandy. Yep.
Wicomico.
Wicomico County.
In Maryland. Isn't that funny, the Indian names that come? You don't, when you think of Maryland now, in contemporary times, you don't think of all, but it was early America and a lot of Indian names in Maryland.
Absolutely. And that is an Indian name.
Yeah. So, how long have you been a sheriff?
I've been a sheriff for 12 years, been in law enforcement, 34 years, retired Maryland State Trooper.
Okay. So how have you seen illegal immigration impact your own state? Like if you from 32 years ago when you first started?
Well, let me say this. It is a well-known fact that right now the overwhelming majority of the drugs that are manufactured in South and Central America are destined for the United States. We Americans only make up 7% of the world's total population, but now 68% of the world's total drugs are consumed here in the United States every year. Why we Americans have an insatiable appetite for narcotics? It's because of our wealth. And the Mexican drug trafficking cartels who now dominate the industry are determined to saturate our country with illegal narcotics. As a Maryland State Trooper and now as a sheriff for the last 12 years, we've seen a massive increase in the number of illegal drug traffickers coming to the United States. Once those drugs reach our country, they've got to have operatives from Mexico, from Colombia, from Peru, from Bolivia, to move these drugs to destinations throughout North America. And for the most part, the illegal criminal aliens who are saturating our country at a time when we're fighting an opioid crisis.
You know, that isn't that just the most ironic? Ironic doesn't really capture, because it's too dastardly to be just ironic. But that congressmen and state legislatures talk a good game about the opioid crisis and about the drug crisis, mm-hmm. but they're not willing to do anything to secure
not.
The borders.
No, they're not.
I don't. Why can't someone make that connection publicly to purge the Senate and the House of anyone who doesn't make that connection?
Could not agree with you more, Sandy. These people need to know that we are going to hold them accountable, and what we are going to do as America's sheriffs, we are going to weaponize and mobilize our sheriffs across this country to assist the Trump administration in carrying out his mission. Right now, we're here in Washington, D.C., to urge our congressmen, our elected representatives, to pass this $5 billion bill that the president needs to further secure our borders, to strengthen our infrastructure, to put greater technology, more boots on the ground. Yesterday, I met with the chief of the U.S. Border Patrol, Carla Provost. She is determined to hire another 7,000 U.S. Border Patrol agents. She is on top of it. She knows what needs to be done, but we need to urge Congress now to act on this money. We've got to have this proper funding to get the job done.
Yeah, I think we should send the sheriffs into the House of Representatives and into the Senate to talk to these senators. I guess you guys have been, I'm sure you've been there, lobbying.
We have.
They have a deaf ear.
Well, I was here 2 weeks ago, and I'm back up here again this week. And while I love being the sheriff of Wicomico County, there are greater needs at our federal level right now because of the lack of action on behalf of our Congress.
I know. It's disgraceful. Sheriff Lewis, let me give you a better introduction, because let me just say that Sheriff Lewis has led the nation in cocaine and heroin seizures. He's also seized millions of dollars of U.S. currency found concealed within elaborately constructed false compartments in motor vehicles found traveling along U.S. Route 13 through Wicomico County. He pioneered the drug interdiction program along Maryland's notorious U.S. 13 corridor and coordinated many multi-jurisdictional investigations following the seizures of large amounts of illegal contraband. You know what that reminds me of? I lived in Berlin, Germany at the end of the Cold War, and people were still hiding people in cars.
Absolutely.
To try to get them through Checkpoint Charlie and free. That's what reminds me of. So you're finding some of these amazing they're hiding things in cars.
They are.
Like what? Give us an idea of what
you're thinking. Well, a prime example. It's not unusual at all. Most recently, we had 64 kilograms of cocaine elaborately concealed in the floorboards of a Volvo XC90. And typically, these electronically controlled false compartments, in order to operate these compartments, you have to put your foot on the brake, hit the rear defrost button, then activate the cruise control while pulling the left power window button up, simultaneously push the right power button down, and then you had to speak. It would only open up by your voice recognition.
How did you figure that out?
These are very elaborately constructed, and while the illegal Mexican drug traffickers have seized and exploited the technology now available, these traps are being primarily installed by illegal Dominican drug trafficking organizations here in the United States. The Mexican cartels rely heavily on the Dominicans to move their wares throughout the United States, and it's an issue that affects us all.
They're not coming through the southern border, are they?
They are coming through the southern border every single day. The overwhelming majority of these loads are coming through our southern border.
That's what I heard, a stat of like 80% of the illicit drugs here, something like 80, is coming through the southern border. Would you agree with that?
88%.
88%. Okay, yeah, well, so how, I know that you have seized a ton of this, but, and there's no way to really quantify how much is out there, mm-hmm. but if you had to, percentage-wise, do you think you're making a dent in this? In terms of seizures?
Absolutely not. We could be doing a much better job if we had true border security. We don't have border security at all. Our weakest link is that border.
That must be maddening. You guys held a press conference on the Capitol grounds. Now, I thought I saw last night a picture of you guys on risers talking with the president, but it didn't show full body.
You did.
Was that you guys?
That was me. I was on the front row.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. By the way, a great uniform. I wish we had a visual.
Thank you,
of
Sandy.
You. This is television, because that looks so beautiful. All those, I don't know. Are these awards? This is your flag for Maryland.
This is our flag for Maryland, our U.S. flag.
And
this is the inaugural badge, and you see President Donald J. Trump's name across the bottom of our badge.
Beautiful.
I obviously wear that in honor of our president for all the hard work he's done for our country.
He is the tip of the spear on this.
Yes,
there's
ma'am.
There's no question about it.
Yes, ma'am.
By himself out there, you know, there's nothing, those little feathers that come down, there's none of those, and then we are with the post, whatever it is, all of us standing behind him. But So at that meeting at the White House, you guys had a mission. Tell us about that.
We did have a mission, and we met with a number of individuals here at the White House, and I got to tell you, they listened to everything we had to say. We had very meaningful conversation. We were joined by Vice President Pence, who came into the room and wanted to reassure us that we had his unconditional support, any of the resources we needed. He was going to make sure we got the resources. Honestly, Sandy, they are already doing that. You know, the president restored the 1033 program, which gave us the hardware, the military hardware, the weaponry we needed to fight this war here in the United States. We wouldn't have this war if we didn't have these porous borders. If they would only allow us to do our job on the border, we could stop the bulk of what's coming into the country. But they're not allowing us to do that. Therefore, they have to rely on American sheriffs in 3,100 counties throughout our nation to do these jobs in our communities, in our cities every day, when the bulk of it could be stopped at the border if we just would secure the border.
Is that, that's part of the message that you delivered? That
absolutely.
I'm sure. Did you make other suggestions? I heard something about suggesting a GoFundMe page for the wall.
Absolutely.
Is that part of it?
And that is part of it, and that's exactly what we wanted. And we wanted the president to know that. We are starting a GoFundMe page through the National Sheriff's Association to assist our president in achieving his goal.
I love that. You know, I love that. And the other suggestion that's been on the books for a long time, and it's, I think it's still an active piece of legislation, is Ted Cruz's proposal to take El Chapo, his drug billions to I think it's it must be in American banks, I'm guessing.
We have seized his accounts throughout the world.
Yeah, so take that money and build the wall.
Absolutely.
I think that, why wouldn't anybody, that's perfect. Why wouldn't we do that?
It is the perfect use of illegal gotten gains. That's exactly what we need to do with those funds.
Yeah, so in your wireless, I know you can't attribute motives, but why wouldn't everyone embrace that in Congress?
Sandy, I don't understand it. I'm like you. I'm so frustrated when I come up here and I see the, and I'm meeting with a couple of senators a day, and I don't expect a favorable report when I walk out of there. They're two of my senators from Maryland, but I certainly want to hear what they have to say, but they're going to hear what I have to say.
Will they listen to you, your senators from Maryland, who
I
are
I don't
not?
Think so. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be on the Hill with a group, but they want to meet with me and only me. They didn't want the rest of my group in the room.
Really?
Yes.
Have you met with them before, your senators?
Not on this issue. I have not.
Seriously.
I have not.
I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Absolutely.
In that conversation.
Now, I've got a congressman that I'm meeting with as well at 11:30, and he's very much on board with us. He's very much in support of the president, and he's been very supportive of my local efforts in Wicomico County, Maryland.
In Maryland, okay, I'm sorry that I don't know this, but is the entire state a sanctuary state now?
It is not a sanctuary state. We have a great governor. We have a great governor who's done a great job, but we have an attorney general who has fought us every step of the way. He has created sanctuary counties. He's created sanctuary cities. He has assisted those in creating these. He's a lawyer. He is a former senator. His name is Brian Frosch, and I'm here to tell you I'm going on the offensive in the next several weeks to unseat him in this next November election. There's a great man by the name of Craig Wolf who's running for attorney general of the state of Maryland. He's got what it takes to help us secure our borders in the state of Maryland. He's got what it takes to help law enforcement with the funds and the tools we need to effectively do our jobs. And we all know we welcome immigration. We're a country of immigrants, but what we don't need is illegal immigration resulting in criminal aliens committing crimes on our people every day.
You know, Maryland is a very interesting state. It's beautiful. You have the horse country in the west and the shores, which are gorgeous. Maryland is a, I don't know what the percentage of minorities, I know it's there's just a strong black population that has been since the Civil War. And so I'm curious to know how black Marylanders feel about the things that you say. Do you have any idea?
You know, Sandy, I think they feel the same way we feel when it comes to illegal immigration and crimes being committed by illegal aliens. But with urban leadership like Baltimore City, I was in Baltimore City during the riots in 2015, spent a lot of time on national TV talking about these riots and assailed the local urban leadership in Baltimore City for allowing that to happen to begin with. Should have never happened in Baltimore City.
Yeah, no, it was disgraceful. So you got bad leadership. You know, it's the same, isn't it, all over the country?
All over the country.
My hometown of Chicago, you know, we think of it's terrible leadership. But I think the tide is turning among black Americans. I really do. I think they're seeing things differently, and they're becoming a little bit more courageous about speaking
up. You bet they are.
So, all right, so you're going to go to Capitol Hill today?
I am.
If you had a win, what would that look like?
to immediately fund the president's request of $5 billion, that would be a win for me. There are many things we've talked about up here, many things we want to accomplish, but that president needs funding to restore the infrastructure along our borders, put greater technology, more boots on the ground, but most importantly, start that wall.
Did they say, did they indicate to you that where they thought Congress was on that bill? Because, listen, what I'm hearing is not good. I'm not hearing anything good. I'm hearing that Republican leadership in the House is just refusing to fund the wall. Will not do it, will not even entertain the notion.
Well, I'm hearing the same thing, Sandy, but like you, we surround ourselves oftentimes with like-minded people. And talking with fellow congressmen who are here in this building here today, they're going to fight like hell to try to get this funding. And I'm going to do everything in my part as a sheriff of Wicomico County and working with our national sheriffs across the country to assist our president in any way we can.
One last personal question. You have a family?
I do. Two beautiful children, a lovely wife, my high school sweetheart, been together 37 years.
Have you had, you know, ICE has been targeted and Border Patrol agents have. Have you felt any threat for your positions on this?
Well, there's no doubt I'm going to get future threats. I've had many threats in the past. I've had many unkind things, many vile emails sent to my work address. I've been the target of two separate possible assassination attempts when I was a Maryland State Trooper. None since I've been sheriff. But I got to tell you, I'm going to stand tall. I'm going to do what's right. I'm an American. I love my county. I love my country.
Yeah, God bless
you. And I'm going to fight like hell to preserve the American that we know.
Sheriff Mike Lewis, Wicomico County, Maryland. I'll get it right yet.
Great
Sheriff
job,
Lewis,
Sandy.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
God
and
bless
we pray
you.
For you and your family
thank
and all of you,
you
guys
Sandy.
In law enforcement.
Thank you so
Sandy
much.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios with you again live from the Phoenix Park Hotel here in downtown D.C. You know, it is fun. Even the noise, I like the noise. I guess it gives me energy. And also I think because we're around so many people who really do love this country, and in various ways have made sacrifices and are not going to stop until we turn it right. And one of them is sitting across from me. He was Lieutenant Commander. He still is, but he's retired. Lieutenant Commander Dan Crenshaw. He's a former Navy SEAL, and he's the Republican nominee for Texas Congressional District 2. That is Ted Poe's seat. Ted was a good champion in Congress, so we were sort of sorry to lose him. And so let me just say that Dan has been endorsed by Rick Perry, Dick Armey, and many of you don't know who Dick Armey was, but he was a champion in the House for years. He's been retired a long time. Senator Tom Cotton, Marcus Luttrell, Texas Tea Party, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Berry, I think, with First Liberty. Is that the
yeah.
Michael Berry?
Liberty. I'm not sure what First Liberty
is. He's an attorney? He's an attorney.
He's a radio show host in Houston.
Then I've got the wrong Michael Berry.
Like he was an attorney at one point in his life, so the older Michael Berry.
Well, nevertheless, I don't know that Michael Berry, but you got a great list of people endorsing you. Dan, of course, I have to talk about your service. Former Navy SEAL, and you, can I just say, you have a patch, so you've lost your eye.
Yep.
In something. Was this in service?
Yeah, about 6 years ago. I was. This is my third deployment. I was struck by an IED blast, a pressure plate IED that my Afghan interpreter stepped on right in front of me while he was responding to a call, and about 15 pounds of explosives dismembered him and blasted me. So I was blind for quite a while. We managed to recover eventually through some just absolute miracles in the operating room, and I can see again out of my left eye, although my vision's actually pretty complicated, and a lot of flesh wounds, but my real permanent damage was my eyes. And I tried to stay in the military, actually. I never really wanted to leave. I deployed a couple more times, but did eventually have to go through the medical retirement process. Wanted to stay in public service. So I was looking at policy work. I got my master's degree in policy from Harvard. And then I ended up in politics.
Oh, well, see, a battle of a different kind. And you still need to work out for it, Dan. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but you know who Sarah Carter is? She's a journalist, and she's on Sean Hannity almost every night.
Okay.
She's covering all these scandals. She's just a dynamo.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, Special Forces, who has lost his sight completely in one of I'm not sure what battle. And so he uses a seeing eye dog. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm so there are many stories like that. I don't need to tell you. But God bless you. And we're proud of you. I mean, we're just proud of you.
Well, God takes us. It's a new fight to take on now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the way to look for it. Look at it. It is a new battle that you have to fight in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But you should tell me, not me telling you. Dan, okay, I have to go. I'm sorry. I just have to go back. Where did you grow up?
Houston. So, okay. Yeah, I'm an oil and gas family. You know, the second district is in the Houston area, and that's always been home. You know, and I've been away a lot, but that's always been home. When Ted Poe announced retirement in my district, that was the window of opportunity. That was the signal for us to, you know, that was how we should serve again. That was how we can make an impact.
Have you ever done anything harder than becoming a Navy SEAL? Just harder in terms of having to push?
I mean, becoming an Navy SEAL, I think pushing through my injuries were certainly challenging. You know, it takes a while to sort of mentally and physically recover from that. But we adapt and overcome. I mean, that's a common saying in the SEAL teams, adapt and overcome. There's various moments in SEAL training that really test you. But we look back on it very fondly, generally speaking. We usually love to tell the stories with kind of in lighthearted ways, because if you take it too seriously, you're gonna have a really hard time in training like that. So, you know, we don't have this sort of post traumatic idea about it. Yeah, it's hard. I broke my leg my first time through. Yeah,
so oh my word!
You know, stress fractures. You're grounded down and so badly that your bones literally break, and that's not an uncommon injury by any means. So yeah, it's tough, and there's setbacks, but you don't give yourself a choice. I think that's how you make it through something like that.
And so as those markers made you tougher and tougher and tougher, then this is what's happening to you now in a different way, but who wants it? I'm sorry, I'm getting personal here, Dan, but I've never had anything like this, but I did have a very broken child. And it wasn't what I expected, my first child, and she was so damaged, and it was so difficult. And I thought, and I trusted God, and I thought, but this is not what I had in mind. This is not what I had in mind. And
right.
Boy, I had to work through that one too. It was a lifetime, you know.
Right. You have to trust that you have a purpose in this world, and
yes.
That it's your duty to find it.
That's right.
God expects you to find it, and that's why we have free will. But we are here for a reason.
Yes, and there's nothing God can't do. Things we can't even imagine. But okay, so here you are running for Congress, and you've got all these great endorsements. How did you get that? Now, what happened with these? Why are these people so excited about you, Dan?
We didn't have all of them at first. You know, the 9-way primary was in the beginning. Nobody knew who we were. That was a hard time.
9-way.
Yeah, 9-way with millions and millions of dollars. This was a very competitive seat. For Republicans,
all right, so
anyway.
Who supported you? I mean, I don't know names.
You know, in the primary, out of that, I can't remember the whole list of what you just had there. But you know, some of the folks who were on my side.
I'm talking about your fundraising. You got there are millions of dollars. I know how this works.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So how did you fund a race?
You know, it's friends and family. We were outspent 30-1.
Okay.
So I mean, the answer is we didn't really fund it.
I get that.
We didn't. We had something, but it was I couldn't put any of my own money in. My family doesn't have any have significant money, so we didn't self-fund at all. It was all friends of friends of friends.
Well, that's where a 9-way race is actually very beneficial. You know, then one person isn't with a $30 million going after you. So,
That did happen. At least one candidate had over $6.5 million spent. So we were outspent 30-1.
All right. So Dan, here's Dan on the campaign trail, and what is his speech?
If you want a future for conservatism and a future for the Republican Party that can articulate our values and pass those values on to the next generation, then vote for me.
So when you think about making it to Congress, which is another tough place you're going to have to battle in, what is the thing that really burns in you? Is it immigration? Is that why you're here? Is that a big thing for you?
Border security and immigration are a pretty big deal in my district. Flooding's a big deal in my district. That's probably the number one issue. You know, we Hurricane Harvey was only a year behind us. It's hurricane season now. This is very fresh on people's minds. Big priorities in my district are going to be building things. Okay, so that includes flooding infrastructure, but it also includes border security. These are the sort of existential threats, as I describe them, that are really on Texans' mind. And then, of course, on top of all of that, you've got your healthcare costs. You've got real issues that people are dealing with. But border security is paramount. We're in Texas, so we're on the front lines here, and a lot of even Texans don't realize this. Texas tax dollars actually go to border security too. So we're fronting the bill for the rest of the nation. We don't like the federal government doing a whole lot of things, but we do expect them to do some of the things they're supposed to do, like international border security, and this is just a long-standing frustration.
Yeah, well, I share it. I'm hearing nothing but bad things out of Congress right now. How desperately we need men who will really, really do what they should be doing, which is making our borders secure and making sure the American citizens have the freedom to pursue prosperity and, you know, the pursuit of happiness.
I mean,
really, this is really what the founders had in mind. It was that we would elect people to worry for us. We would pay attention, but they were the ones who'd become expert on the issues, and they were the ones that would fight the battles. And we would be free then to pursue our lives and enjoy our families. And somehow it's gotten off the rails. And so we need men with integrity, Dan, to serve in Congress. All right, so Houston's an interesting city to me. It's I'm not an expert on Houston, but with the times that I've been there, very diverse population, doing some really radical things in terms of, like, I remember a group of pastors who had their sermons subpoenaed by the mayor, or I don't know if you use the word subpoenaed, but asked them to turn over their sermons on gay marriage. So you got that strain, that the mayor was quite liberal. Then you have this strong strain of Christians and pastors who are fighting against it. Then you've got a huge immigrant population. So where does Houston come down? I mean, Austin's extremely liberal. Dallas is probably more conservative. Where's Houston in the spectrum of political views?
Houston, I think, is... it's certainly more liberal than people realize, especially the closer you get to inside the city. It actually looks a little bit like Dallas, in fact. But it's a reasonable debate that goes on. Far more reasonable than, say, other cities. You might be larger cities in America like New York or Boston or D.C., where even the word conservative elicits scoffs from the other side. That's not the case in Houston. We still have conversations. And I notice that when I'm campaigning, and as I try to, especially in the general election, I try to campaign a lot to independents and young independents. Most young people identify as independents. They'll have a conversation with you. Okay, they just want to be reasoned with, and that's perfectly fine. I think that's what people deserve. So all hope is not lost in a place like Houston. I might feel a little differently about other cities in the U.S., but I think we're doing okay in Houston.
Hey, I'm curious about something, Dan. You're not that old. I don't even want to guess, because are you even
34?
You're 34, yeah. You're pretty young. So you grew up in the American school system, and yet somehow, from my perspective, the American school system is not teaching our kids about our Constitution, about civics, the organization of our government, just the principles that their parents or their grandparents grew up with and understand.
Or they teach in such a boring way that you can't possibly remember what the heck you just learned.
So you're a product of that. Yeah. You are a product of that, unless your mother homeschooled you. And so, did she?
No.
Okay.
But
so this is my question.
Yeah.
So then you go to the military and you serve in the Navy SEALs. Does the military still, or the Navy SEALs, do you ever get into that, what America really is, what you are fighting for? Or do you just come in? Is there any, like if you go to Naval Academy, you learn history and stuff like that?
In the spiritual sense, yes. In the sort of that sense of patriotism and the ideals that we're founded on. But if you're referring a little bit more closely to civics, and specifically what the role of government is and how it was designed and how that's changed over time, that history is probably never taught, I would agree. Because it's, you really have to dig into it to understand it. And what it's caused is this, I'd say this, this temptation for all voters to only look to federal government to solve their problems. So which is naturally what the Democrats want. You know, I try to explain to people what the difference is between the parties. It's effectively a sliding scale on the role of federal government. You know, if you really wanted to oversimplify the difference between parties, and And when you have kind of a breakdown of the Congress and you're constantly abdicating powers from the Congress, and you look to the federal government to solve your problems, it makes the presidential election absolutely existential, which is what causes division. When we forgot about this idea that the whole reason we have federalism, the whole reason we have 50 different states with 50 different governments, is so that we could live together peacefully.
Yes, and I think the other problem that kind of folds into why we're here this week is that when you have an influx of people from countries who are ruled by in a very different body politic, where they do have strong big government and they're accustomed to government taking care of everything, it changes the mindset of the population when they never are reinstructed. I think that's part of what's in play here. I'm sure you would agree.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so if you win this, and that'll be two months from now, almost exactly, what do you hope to do? Like, if you had a committee to choose, what would you be on?
You know, I'll look for things that'll help my district the most, and frankly, flooding and border security are still my priorities. So, you know, how we get there, and how you get on the committees you want as a freshman is the task at hand. So I'll look at things like armed services, because that actually does touch the Army Corps of Engineers in a way, and it does touch our national security issues, and it's also something I can greatly contribute to from my past and helping federal government in that sense.
Dan, God bless you for everything that you have done for this country.
Thank you so much.
You stand tall. And you know that millions of us just appreciate that so much. I don't care what they say on television, and I don't care what the screaming hordes say in the Senate hearing rooms. You know, these people are untethered from reality. Those of us that understand reality.
We're seeing it today in the hearings.
Yes, and we know what you've done, and we appreciate it, and God bless you.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm anxious to see what God's going to do in your life, because I think it's going to be something you can't even imagine.
Well, thank you for having me. And everybody follow me on CrenshawForCongress.com.
All right. Okay, Sandy Rios, and it's been a pleasure being here this week for Radio Row. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be back Monday. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.